Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Court, please. Hear ye. All persons having business before the Honorable Beverly Kenomi, Justice of the Norfolk Superior Court, in the county of Norfolk. Your name and your attendance, you shall be heard. By the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, code now open. May be.
Commonwealth versus Reed, 2282CR117. Can I have the Commonwealth identify themselves for the record?
Adam Lally for the Commonwealth. Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Lally.
Good morning, Your Honor. Laura McLaughlin for the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Ms. McLaughlin.
Good
morning, Ms. Gilman.
I'm sorry. Good morning, Your Honor. Alan Jackson on behalf of Ms.
Good morning, Mr. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honor. Elizabeth Little, also on behalf of Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Little.
And good morning, David Giannetti for Karen Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Giannetti. Good morning, Ms. Reed. All right. So, Paul, can I see it? What I want to start with are motions that were either allowed by agreement. I just want to make sure our record's completely accurate. And if it's not, it's my error. So motions that I have that were allowed by agreement, I may need to take 1 minute. Jim, I'll be right back.
Court, all rise.
Which one? The one with that? Bill Nigel.
Yeah, the Nigel's one. Yeah.
My dad? All right, thank you. So allowed by agreement or previously allowed by me. The motion in limine to admit the 911 call, was there an objection to that? It is paper number 298.
There was no objection.
Yeah, I have that as allowed by agreement, so okay. the motion for the court reporter 291 and impoundment of what is supposed to be impounded, that was allowed by agreement as well, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Commonwealth filed a motion regarding Zoom as opposed to webinar, and that was allowed by agreement as well, 292.
No objection.
And motion to allow in-court identification, paper 294, that was allowed by agreement as well?
No objection.
Okay. Motion limine to admit the victim's photograph. I have not seen which photograph you're using, but you're in agreement that the about the photograph. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. That won't be an issue.
I have it as allowed by agreement. Are you using one or more, or have you not decided yet?
Just one, Your Honor, and I provided counsel with a copy of that as well as some other things today.
Yeah.
Okay.
By agreement.
All right. Thank you. 295, Jim.
Thank you.
Commonwealth's motion limine to admit photographs of Mr. O'Keefe's injuries during the autopsy. We had a lot of discussion with jurors about this. This motion is allowed by agreement, correct?
Which number is it?
I'm sorry, that was 296. So Commonwealth's motion limine to admit the defense paper number 307. I believe this was allowed. Commonwealth's motion limine to admit defendants out of court statements for purposes of medical treatment and certified medical records from the Good Samaritan Hospital. The notation that I had written on this was that the defendant has no objection to the admission of statements made for the purpose of medical treatment and medical records. The court takes under advisement testimony regarding the blood alcohol testing because that's a separate issue and we'll address that today. Is that your understanding of where we stand with this motion?
Yes, that's our understanding. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Jim, that was, I already said that, right? Yes. 307.
Yes, thank you.
The use of leading questions on John O'Keefe's young niece and nephew, we'll see where we stand. I think I said to Mr. Lally, jurors would rather hear from the witness than the lawyer. So let's see how it goes. And if you think that you need to switch to leading questions, please just come to sidebar. I'll give you the leeway you need, of course, based on the child's testimony or child's manner of testifying. All right, so you were both in an agreement on what I have is 316 and the defendant's motion number, paper 288. Regarding any reference to Aiden Kearney, a.k.a. Turtle Boy, or his pending criminal charges for witness intimidation. So both parties have agreed to not introduce this in evidence in their case in chief. If anyone opens the door, the motion will be revisited. And I think I said that I sort of disagreed with you both. I do think if witnesses testify to this spontaneously, then it comes in. And it can be pursued further, but just come to sidebar. All right, 312, Commonwealth's motion to preclude reference to any bad character or any prior misconduct of the victim or any witness. That was allowed by agreement, Ms. DNA.
Do you know which motion we're talking about?
Oh, yes. Oh, no, that's agreed.
That was 312, Jim.
Thank you.
313, motion limine to exclude character, reputation, evidence of the defendant. You're not putting in reputation evidence, right? We talked about this, Ms. Giannetti.
This is a motion to exclude good character evidence. Is that?
It's paper number.
By the Commonwealth.
It was filed by the defendant, and I questioned whether you intended to put in character evidence, and you told me no.
That is accurate.
Okay, so that's allowed too, Jim.
Which one was that?
313, let me just check.
That's a Commonwealth
motion. It is. Commonwealth's motion. It's 313, other Commonwealth date stamped, I guess, or date stamped 23.
Thank you.
There was no objection to the Commonwealth's motion in limine to introduce certified records from the registry, correct, Ms. Giannetti?
Correct.
All right, and then motions that perhaps were not agreed upon, but I previously ruled on. So, or I think I ruled on them. If not, these are my rulings. 297, Commonwealth number 7. Commonwealth's motion in limine to preclude reference and redact the manner of death contained on the victim's death certificate. And I think I said in open court, this motion is denied as to cross-examination of the medical expert, but that undetermined language will not appear. That will be redacted from the death certificate. You'll have the live witness here to cross-examine us to that. So, Jim, that's 297.
Yes, Your Honor.
Commonwealth's motion in limine to prohibit reference to any federal investigations, paper 317, Commonwealth bold stamp 27, to prohibit reference to any federal investigations conducted by the U.S. Attorney's Office and or Federal Bureau of Investigations. That motion was allowed after hearing. 305 is the motion regarding chalks. We'll address that when we address the defendant's motion regarding their audiovisual person. The third-party culprit, the ruling's clear on that, not in opening. That's 320-30. I think that was clear when we talked about it. All right, so those are the ones that were fairly quick to just go through. I've got another set that is sort of in the fairly quick range. And then we'll move on to the Commonwealth's discovery-type motions. So first, paper 284, defendant's motion for sanctions and exclusion of evidence based on the Commonwealth's failure to timely comply with discovery orders. Mr. Jackson, you told us at sidebar the other day that you are withdrawing that motion, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right, so Mr. Clerk, that's motion 285, paper 285, withdrawn by counsel.
I'm sorry, 284?
Okay, I have it as 285.
Yeah, 285 is the affidavit.
Okay, yep, so 283.
Thank you.
Withdrawn by counsel. Motion eliminate for review. So as defense counsel plainly states that a defendant is not entitled to be present at a view. And what I've determined here is that based on concerns for security issues and, frankly, distracting the jurors, the defendant will not be present with us on the view. And as you've stated here, that is well within my discretion. All right, Commonwealth's motion in limine to admit defendant's out-of-court statements as statements of a party opponent. So I think that this was one of the ones that you all agreed to. Paper 308, 18 on the top, and it's followed by paper 19 regarding the various statements made to the media, to Boston Magazine, to ABC News correspondents. So I think the defendant had said previously that you were in agreement that all these statements come in. Is that right, Mr. Iannetti?
Sorry, Your Honor. Yes, that's correct.
All right. So I had a logistical question about I don't know how long the ABC News interview is. How long is that?
Your Honor, what I can say is as to each of those, the Commonwealth's intention would be to play, to admit the entirety of the interviews, but to only play selected portions of those interviews.
All right, because what I did, I re-listened to the nearly 4 hours, 3 hours and 40 minutes of the Boston Magazine audio. And there's no objection to it from counsel. What I listened to, it made sense, and I didn't know how you would play a 3 hour and 40 minute audio. If you think you need to, we just need time to be able to put it into the schedule.
Sure.
Okay?
But no, I don't feel the need to play the entirety of it.
Okay. I was involved in a trial once where we watched a whole movie. So just give me a heads up if you think it's a lengthy segment, but how long is the ABC interview, just in case counsel wants to go back and fill in?
I think the portions that we have are not terribly lengthy. And as far as the statements are concerned, it's even less of that.
All right. So does defense counsel intend to also play the... I'm trying to find out. If we're going to need a whole 3 hour and 40 minutes, I need to know that. I still haven't got an answer as to how long the Dateline or ABC, whatever it was, video and audio is. How long is the entire thing? Do you know?
You're asking me?
Either of you. I don't have that. So I didn't review it.
May I have just a moment with
yes.
My memory and my belief is I think, and I can't recall specifically which one is one or the other, but I think one is about 10 minutes long, the other is about 5 minutes long, and again, I would only be playing, if any, portions of, you know, the defendant's statements, not the entirety of the broadcast.
Okay.
And if there are portions that weren't played, I would expect...
So that's what I'm trying to figure out. So I'm concerned on the 3 hour and 40 minute one, which seems to be all of it's admissible. Or there's no objection to it, and if, you know, I just need to know if we're going to play something for 3 hours and 40 minutes. The other one, if it's 15 minutes, I don't need as much heads up.
My guess would be anything that we would want to present that wasn't presented would be in the 15, 20 minute.
Okay,
category.
That's fine. It's just for scheduling purposes.
Right.
All right, so Jim,
yes.
Paper 309. And 308, they're the same pretty much. Those are allowed by agreement.
Okay.
All right. And it's sort of in the same vein. So it's, again, it's another statement of the defendant. It's the statement of the defendant at the Milton State Police Barracks that I had not seen before because it was post grand jury. And we watched it. I had the opportunity to watch what we all watched here in court last Friday. And over the weekend, I watched the entire hour and a half or so of it. So you're in agreement that the statement comes in, and the Commonwealth says that the Commonwealth needs some leeway to show that she was in custody after arrest for a period of time, and Commonwealth wants to play the video. I don't think we need the video. Much of it is just looking at their computer. So the video part will be out. You don't want it in, correct?
That's correct. We had asked for the audio only.
Yeah. Okay, so the audio only, but it needs some context. It's not just that she's sitting down having a cup of coffee with the police and makes these statements. So they're clearly voluntary, clearly unsolicited. How do you want to work that out? Can it be that this occurred at the Milton State Police Barracks on a particular date? Because if you can't work it out, then I'll decide it.
I mean, from our position, Your Honor, we don't object that the statements were made at the Milton State Police Barracks as they were, and it was in that context that she was speaking to the police at the barracks. We would object to introducing evidence that she was under arrest at that time.
Yeah, I don't think we need that. But okay. So at the Milton State Police Barracks on a particular date.
That's acceptable.
Do you need more than that, Mr. Lally, for context?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. How is this going in?
Through the trooper to whom she was speaking.
Okay. All right. All right, so Mr. Clerk,
yes.
Audio only, Commonwealth may elicit testimony. Statement occurred at the Milton State Police Barracks. Mr. Lally, do you remember the date?
June 9th, 2022.
Thank you.
22?
Yes.
Okay. So audio only, Mr. Clerk. Commonwealth may elicit testimony that the statement occurred at the Massachusetts State Police Barracks on June 9th, 2022. All right. So those are the fairly quick ones. Before we get to what I think are the more complex ones or the ones that I need a little bit more argument from you on, I am concerned about discovery. So, Mr. Lally, when I was going through copies of what I had previously, the first time or one time that you, Commonwealth, filed on March 21st of this year a notice for reciprocal discovery and notice of experts. You then, last week, I think, filed a renewed motion for reciprocal discovery and request for voir dire of any defense experts. You asked that that be impounded. And that will be based on your motion and appears to be sort of an affidavit in support. So where do we stand with discovery?
So with reference to the reciprocal discovery, what Commonwealth is seeking is noted there are a number of witnesses listed on the defendant's witness list with no materials provided as to who these people are or what their intended testimony is. The issue with regard to experts is essentially there are five experts. Mr. Green, who there was an attachment to a motion with an affidavit and some materials. I think I have everything in relation to that. With regard to Dr. Sheridan, I have an affidavit and a curriculum vitae, and that's essentially it with respect to that. I just am inquiring as to whether or not there are any reports or any other sort of findings or anything post that. The other three experts all relate to that specific, I'm sorry. The next would be Dr. Van E, who...
Which, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Dr. Christopher Van E.
Yeah.
He's... I'm a little, so essentially there are that gentleman and then three individuals from this ARCA company who are all purported to be testifying in the area of crash reconstruction. None of them are crash reconstructionists. They're all biomechanical or biomedical engineers. With regard to Dr. Van E, who I've had some experience with in the past, my typical dealings with him is there's some sort of report written by him. I have nothing. I just have a CV and about a paragraph of what's anticipated as far as his testimony. The other three individuals, my issue is they were, there is a report that's within the federal materials in relation to what they did. However, it's a single
in relation
report.
To what?
In regard to whatever examinations or tests or whatever that...
Does it include all three experts, though?
Well, so that's the issue.
Yeah.
The issue is the report is signed by all three individuals. So I have no idea who did what, who would testify to what, who has an opinion as to what, or what that would be. So I'm just looking for some additional information or any clarification as to what each of those respective people would be testifying to beyond just all three signed a report.
Okay, who's arguing this for the defense?
With the court's permission, I'd like to handle the issue regarding civilian witnesses and have Mr. Jackson address the experts.
All right.
My argument's very brief, Your Honor. We're well aware of our obligations under Rule 14, and any statements that we have regarding civilian witnesses that fall under that rubric, we will turn over, and we have
turned over. Why haven't you?
No, we've turned over what we have. So we, in our view, we've complied with discovery with regard to the civilian witnesses that Mr. Lally speaks about.
All right. Do you have addresses for those witnesses, Mr. Lally?
We did it.
Yeah. All right. So they need addresses, right? If there's nothing there, they need the addresses so the police can go out and interview.
We will get them addresses by the end of the day today.
Okay. All right. So my concern was that when, Mr. Lally, when did you file your certificate of compliance?
That would have been, I believe the Wednesday, not last Wednesday, the Wednesday before that.
And I had previously told counsel I would expect within 2 days of that, because obviously you've been preparing this case for a long time.
Of course, yes.
But so to have Mr. Lally stand here today and say that he doesn't have all this information that you know he's entitled to, I mean, dates of birth and addresses of witnesses are pretty standard, Ms. Iannetti, especially if you have, you know, not provided anything that they're going to say. So that should have happened a week ago.
Your Honor,
if I may defer to my co-counsel.
Well, okay. And we do have to talk about how we're going to do this at trial. Okay.
Yes.
Your Honor, I provided reciprocal discovery to Mr. Lally within 24 hours of receiving the certificate of compliance.
Anything about these witnesses that Ms. Iannetti says they have everything on?
Yes, he's received statements from all the witnesses that we have statements for, which included their dates of birth, addresses.
How many is that, Ms. Little? How many witnesses?
I don't know off the top of my head, but every single report that we have for these witnesses that Mr. Lally has received in his witness list, he has reports for.
Okay.
And a number of our witnesses, obviously, are witnesses that the Commonwealth has interviewed.
Right. I think I crossed out much of your list when I read the names of the witnesses,
exactly.
Right, because they were duplicates.
So we have complied with at least those obligations. And if there's any addresses that we haven't produced, I will make sure that gets done today. But have the vast majority of everything.
All right. Anything specific, Mr. Lally, on the civilian witnesses?
Well, just in looking at the defense witness list, there are 77 witnesses that are listed. 35 of them are on the Commonwealth's witness list, and I have statements from 4 witnesses, not including experts, so that would probably make it to 9, or if you include the investigator, 10 or 11. So there's still a substantial amount of witnesses that I don't have addresses, date of birth, or any statements from, or even what their anticipated testimony would be.
Your Honor, there's also probably an additional 10 to 12 witnesses that he has reports for from the federal materials, which include addresses, statements, that type of information.
All right. It's my view that that's still the defendant's obligation to provide, all right, or at least acknowledge where they are. All right. Let me hear the expert response, Mr. Jackson.
Your Honor, with regard to Dr. Vanney, Chris Vanney, first of all, he is technically a rebuttal witness. There's a trooper named Trooper Paul that's going to be called in the Commonwealth's case in chief, and he's going to testify to some key cycle information. Key cycles are trigger events or cycling events with regard to the SUV. Chris Vanney is expected to testify in rebuttal to Trooper Paul's testimony that his Trooper Paul's analysis of the key cycles is flawed in terms of timing. And the number of key cycles that he relates back to an event that takes the SUV back to 34 Fairview. So Chris Vanney has done a similar analysis, or at least overviewed or looked over Trooper Paul's analysis, and has determined that Trooper Paul's analysis is incorrect. We included his name, although he's a rebuttal witness, we included his name just to be in an abundance of caution.
All right.
He's not produced a report.
Do you have to at least tell the Commonwealth what he bases his opinion on, what he has viewed, what he bases his opinion on?
The exact same information, the raw data that Trooper Paul based his opinion on.
All right, so is this the first you're hearing this, Mr. Lally?
There's kind of a vague description to that effect. But again, what I'm hearing is similar to that in the sense of he disagrees with the Commonwealth's expert, but I don't have any foundation for that or what specifically he disagrees about or what his points of contention would be with Trooper Paul's report, as far as no report, no basis of opinion, no anything of that nature. That's my concern.
Okay. And you've requested a voir dire?
Yes, Your Honor.
Of the experts? All right. We don't want to bring this witness out here early for a voir dire, so I suggest you get the information that was requested.
I'll be okay. Happy to.
If we have to bring him out, we have to bring him out.
No, I'm not looking to bring him out, and I don't think that he needs to be voir dired. He's going to look at the exact same, and I'll call Mr. Lally and explain to him what I think in a little bit more granular detail is going to be the sum and substance of his testimony. But Mr. Lally can conceive, as Trooper Paul walks through his analysis, Chris Vanney is going to walk through the exact same analysis. It's the same data set. They're both working with apples and apples. He just has a different conclusion that the key cycles are not in keeping with what Trooper Paul analyzed because he left some key cycles out. Pretty simple stuff. But I'm happy to contact Mr. Lally offline and let him know exactly what it is that
all right.
has a problem.
All right, so you do that, and if it's not resolved by Monday, we will pick a date within the next week to have voir dires of whatever experts that insufficient discovery has been provided to the Commonwealth on. So let's try and work everything out. The rules are very clear, and you need to provide this information.
And I thought we had, but I'm happy to have that additional conversation. And I'll do the same thing with regard to the ARCA witnesses as well.
So is there anything specifically, Mr. Lally, that you're looking for today in response to the biomechanical engineers?
Just specifically what their opinions are and what they're based on.
And who did what?
Who did what?
Should be fairly easy to provide, Mr. Jackson.
It has been in about a 9 or 10 page report that's detailed, single spaced.
But does it say who did what? I read the report as part of the federal materials. I couldn't figure out who did what. So,
okay, I'm happy to talk to Mr. Lally about that. I believe the answer is going to be, in sum and substance, all of them work together as a team to come to the opinions and conclusions that are recited in the report. But I'll be happy to have an additional conversation with Mr. Lally about that. I don't know that I know every single thing. As a matter of fact, I don't know every single thing that everybody did, who screwed what bolt into what nut, et cetera. But I think, by and large, Mr. Lally and I can come to an agreement about what the contours of each of their testimony would be.
Okay.
And by the way, they are accident reconstructionists, so there's a...
Do you have their CVs?
I do, and so does Mr. Lally.
I do.
Anything on the CV about being accident reconstructionist?
There is listings of accident reconstructionists, but I think that's part of the Commonwealth's request for a voir dire is the qualifications... I don't think meet that standard for them to be able to testify in that area.
All right. So two things. When the two of you were working on this between now and Monday, if the Commonwealth is not satisfied in requesting a voir dire, I need to hear from the two of you whether we need to do that before the evidence really gets started, or if it can be done before the witness testifies.
Okay.
All right.
Understood, Your Honor.
All right, so Commonwealth's motion for voir dire of any witness to be asked for opinion or character of defendant or any witness. I had that this was allowed by agreement, 314, DS number 24.
That's agreed.
And 304, Commonwealth's bolded number 14, Commonwealth's motion for order regarding opening statements and notice of any visual aids defense intends to display to jury during opening statement. So I need to know what parties intend to put up for exhibits or for chalks, whatever you intend to put up in opening. I know you're doing the opening, Ms. Giannetti, so I need to know what you intend to display?
Nothing.
Okay, that makes it easier. So while we're talking just briefly of openings, you had told me, Ms. Tianetti, that you thought you could get everything in 35 minutes. I will give you both 45 minutes.
Oh, that's perfect. Yes, I'll be less than 45.
I'll hold you to that.
I know you will.
All right, so Mr. Lally, 45 minutes for the Commonwealth?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. And Commonwealth, do you intend to put anything up during openings?
During openings, no, Your Honor.
All right. Okay. Commonwealth's motion limine for notice in voir dire of Bowdoin. I thought that that was, we decided that there would be a voir dire regarding before the Bowdoin testimony comes in.
I don't recall that, Your Honor.
All right. Well, Commonwealth's entitled to a voir dire. There'll be a voir dire.
My understanding of the court's ruling, with, as it applies to opening statements, is that I cannot point the finger at a third-party culprit, but I can introduce the idea of an inadequate investigation and discuss Bowdoin evidence.
As long as you know what's coming into evidence.
That's perfectly fair.
Remember, I use that term, competent evidence.
Of course.
That's what it has to be.
Of course.
All right. I'm sorry, Jim. 321, the Commonwealth's bolded 31, in case my number's not right.
Thank you.
319. So this is, we talked a little bit about this. It's Commonwealth's motion for advance notice if defendant intends to cross-examine any witness about alleged bias and request for pretrial ruling on whether the proposed evidence demonstrates a plausible showing of alleged bias. So as you well know, Mr. Lally, bias is definitely an area that is ripe for cross-examination and extensive cross-examination. I needed to know exactly what your concerns are.
And, Your Honor, I think what we, what I would suggest might make the most sense with this is to sort of take it as it comes.
Okay.
I think it's a little difficult to put counsel in a position to, you know, cite specific things that they wish, and
we have a couple of motions where we do need to do that.
Right.
But for generally with this, and because this was broad, that's why I did want to, when we had a brief hearing on this, I said that I did need to hear from you regarding specific statements. So what we're going to endorse this, Mr. Clerk, mm-hmm. is that Commonwealth will object on a question-by-question basis. Does that work, Mr. Lally?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does that work for the defense, Mr. Iannetti?
For sure.
Okay.
Commonwealth will object
to specific questions.
Thank you.
And Mr. Lally, if you know in advance, depending on how the testimony comes in, if a particular witness gets up and you know before any examination what your concerns are, we'll visit it before the testimony.
Understood.
Okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
A similar motion to the defense expert issue. Mr. Clerk, I believe it's 315. It's bolded number 25 from the Commonwealth's motion in limine to prohibit defense experts from testifying regarding scientific studies or anecdotal experience and request for voir dire. Mr. Jackson, do any of your witnesses intend to give anecdotal experiences?
I said this in the argument. I don't really know what that means, but no. Just the common sense knowledge of common sense definition of what that is. To my knowledge, they're not going to be talking about anything.
Okay, I think it's pretty clear what it is. But if you think they're not going to do it, if it seems that they are, then we need to know. And how about the scientific studies?
The scientific studies would not be referred to in any of their testimony that I'm going to elicit at all.
Okay.
They did some scientific studying of the material. Obviously.
No, do you mean like learned treatises and things like that, Mr. Lally?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Yes.
They're not going to be citing to learned treatises that I'm going to listen to.
Okay. All right. That's it in my category of discovery. There's some overlap in the motions that I think the following motions may take a little bit more time, and it's sort of the somewhat complex ones. So 311, Commonwealth's bold number 21, Commonwealth's motion in limine to admit the victim's out-of-court statements relating to his state of mind. There's sort of some overlap, Mr. Lally, that we'll get into with other statements. But so this is the Commonwealth versus Qualls, Commonwealth versus Bins, that whole line of cases. Why don't I hear you? Is there any objection to this?
We may have a moment, Judge.
The Commonwealth, we were here last. The Commonwealth was told that they need to provide with the statements or the areas they intend to introduce. They do so in this motion. They do more extensively in another motion that's sort of dovetails. And the other motion concerns the Aruba incident, the arguments between the defendant and Mr. O'Keefe, and also this Bin/Qualls-type testimony.
Right, so I think our position, Your Honor, was that we need to know the specifics of what they intend to introduce. My expectation is that some of that will be admissible and some of it we won't have an objection to, but it's difficult to give either a blanket objection or a blanket assent without knowing the specifics.
Okay, but you did sort of make a blanket objection to the Aruba incident, if we
but
call
we
it
had,
that.
We had to without knowing the specifics.
So on the second page of this motion, the Commonwealth intends to introduce statements the victim made to his family members and friends close in time to the murder about his relationship with the defendant and his decision to terminate the relationship. The Commonwealth also intends to introduce the victim's statements through text messages authored by the victim and contained within the victim's cell phone that express his decision communicated directly to the defendant to terminate their relationship. That goes squarely with Qualls and Bins.
Right. With regard to the text messages, I don't believe we have a basis to object.
All right. So I'm also... All right, I'm also going to allow statement. Mr. Lally, tell us what the statements specifically, as best you can. Who would be testifying? What family members? Does this involve the two children?
Yes, Your Honor. So there are statements that are made by the victim to the defendant in front of each of the two children with his intention to...
What are they roughly?
Essentially that the relationship isn't working anymore and that he would like to break up with her, ask her to leave the house. She refuses, and this is in front of both the niece and the nephew.
All right. Ms. Tianetti, I'll hear you on that.
Our expectation is any statements that were made, allegedly made by Mr. O'Keefe to my client in front of other witnesses, we don't have a basis to object to that.
Okay, so that's coming in. And you've had the benefit of the same interviews for a long time.
Correct.
Right?
So. We don't waive potential hearsay objections during trial, Your Honor, but I think generally that's our answer.
All right, so on 311, Mr. Clerk, I'm going to allow that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, so sort of the same. 310. Right, and the defendant's is 283. It's a similar motion. So, Mr. Lally, why don't I hear you on... So this is the one when I said there are three areas here as I see it. If we call it the Aruba incident, the animosity between the defendant and the victim in weeks and days prior to the victim's death, and that the defendant admitted to numerous witnesses at different times that the last thing she recalls was getting into an argument with the victim. So that whole domestic violence line of cases with state of mind clearly is admissible. So why don't I start with you, Mr. Lally? Go ahead and argue your motion.
So, Your Honor, specifically, what the Commonwealth is seeking to introduce there is you have the incident in Aruba, which there are really four witnesses who have information to provide to the jury.
Do we need all four?
Well, so from different perspectives is what I would say. So two of them are, the incident or altercation occurs in the lobby of the hotel where the the defendant, the victim, and the children are staying along with a larger party of friends of the victim. Following that incident, both children indicate that there's approximately 20-minute screaming match or something of, to that effect.
Both children were present?
Yes, within the hotel room, and both indicate to that. Then you have the woman, Marietta Sullivan, who's involved in the incident in the lobby, and then you have her sister, who is the person who invited them on the trip in the first place.
There's some additional testimony from these witnesses, too, other than just the statements?
Correct. So the additional testimony from the sister who invited them on the trip, she's not a recipient witness to the altercation. I wouldn't be asking her anything about
that. Okay.
What I would be asking her about is just her observation. So she had gone out the evening prior with the victim and the defendant to dinner, and sort of the disparity between sort of their demeanor on the night before versus post this incident. And there was some statements that Mr. O'Keefe made to her about sort of the nature of their relationship or the nature of his relationship with the defendant.
And those statements have been provided to the defendant?
Yes, sir.
There was testimony in the grand jury regarding those statements?
There is, yes. There's state police reports as well as testimony from the witness and the grand jury.
Okay.
In addition to that, as far as statements relative to the nature of the relationship, there are some minimal statements that are made by the defendant to a couple of witnesses at the waterfall the night before. Again, those are also contained within troopers' reports and the grand jury testimony of those witnesses. There are also the text messages between the victim, Mr. O'Keefe, and the defendant, which specifically address the nature of their relationship. There are text messages from the defendant to Mr. Higgins, which again specifically address not only the Aruba incidents weeks later, as well as and being a continuing point of concern, at least from the defendant's perspective, as to the nature of their relationship. And then taking all of that sort of in conjunction with the text messages between the two that day and the voicemails, messages that the defendant left on the victim's cell phone shortly after the murder occurs. And then there are further statements that the defendant makes to a number of different people, whether they be troopers, whether it be paramedics, whether they be Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts, or in the presence of them, as well as at least three paramedics, indicating that the last time that she saw the victim, Mr. O'Keefe, they had gotten into an argument essentially at the house at Fairview Road right before she had left. So those are sort of the totality of the sort of specific areas in the nature of the relationship that the Commonwealth would be seeking to explore through the testimony of a number of different witnesses.
Okay. Who's arguing this for the defense?
I will, Judge. As I'm listening, there seems to be quite a few different categories of information that the Commonwealth is seeking to introduce, and through different means. It's difficult to, again, just give one blanket objection, one blanket assent to this. Generally speaking, witnesses who would testify about statements of Mr. O'Keefe's state of mind, that probably comes in.
We talked a little bit about that. That's the Qualls and the
correct.
Bins line of cases. So
correct.
I did rule that those are coming in.
We recognize that,
okay.
Yes.
You said probably.
Well, yes. Well, Mr.
Right.
Lally raised it again, so...
And you don't have to assent. You can object to anything you want to object to, and I make the call. So you don't need to point out, you don't need to apologize for objecting. Just go ahead and tell me the defendant's position.
Right, I understand, Judge. I think the position here is that we recognize that much of this will come in, but we don't waive the ability to object to a specific question what it asks for, how it's phrased, what could potentially come in if the question's too vague. So that's my hesitation on
that. That's well taken. So even if you assent to it, doesn't mean that if a question crosses the line, you're prohibited from objecting to it. I've never done that before.
That's my point.
Yeah, so you haven't tried before me before. I would not do that. So I find that, let's say for the Aruba statement, all of these go to state of mind and motive. I will give a limiting instruction. I will make the findings that I need to find. Pursuant to Kamala versus Samir, it's a footnote in that case. It's footnote 8, I believe. I will make those findings at the time. There's certainly been a sufficient showing from the Commonwealth. So I will give a limiting instruction. I will welcome proposed limiting instructions if you want to file them. I know you're all busy. If you don't want to, that's fine. I can handle that. Regarding the animosity, again, it's close in time. It goes to the nature of the relationship. I will give a limiting instruction. I'm confident that the limiting instructions will be followed by the jurors, that they're understandable. I will make observations at the time, and if they're appear to be understanding and nodding, which you often see on limiting instructions, I will make those findings as well. But I'm satisfied that the jurors will be able to understand a limiting instruction and use the testimony only for the intended purpose. And the animosity goes to the nature of the relationship, goes to the domestic violence line of cases. And the argument being the last thing that the defendant says she recalled, and the children's testimony regarding ending the relationship, again, that goes to state of mind, and it goes to the Qualls and Bins line of cases. And I will give a limiting instruction. I'm confident the jurors will understand. So that's my ruling on that, which actually, so it would be a denial, Jim, of defendant's motion 283.
Just for the record, it's 282.
282. And that's denied. I mean, it will not go to propensity, and we can make sure of that. And the Commonwealth's motion is 310, Jim, the bold 20, and that was sort of hand in hand with the other one. All right. So moving on to, I think we just briefly talked about, so it's paper number 306, Commonwealth's motion in limine to admit expert celebrate demonstration. I think we briefly talked about it, and I wanted to know, so are the defendants objecting to the, so your witness's name again, I read it every day for the last week.
That's okay. It's Mr. Ian Whiffen.
Yes. So, about him doing a demonstration, is there an objection to that from the defense?
Your Honor, since the last time we were in court, we've had an opportunity to look at that.
Yeah, I'd like to look at it, but okay, so you looked at it?
We did. It's not that long. It's maybe, I don't know, I want to say 22, 25 minutes, something like that. We'll submit on the papers and stand on the objection that we previously made, that it doesn't comport with the exactitude that we think is necessary for a demonstration, but I don't think it bears. It's not an enormous deal for us. We do stand on the objection, but I'll submit on the papers.
All right, so I'm going to allow it, but Mr. Lely, I'd also like to see it.
Of course.
Okay, so if you could get me a copy, Ms. Gilman, can you get me a copy of that before the end of today?
I think so, yes.
All right,
thank you. Speaking for.
Yeah. All right. All right, so Jim, 306 is allowed.
Thank you.
All right, so the two that may take, there's three actually, but the two that we'll cover here before we get to sort of logistics and sequestration. Commonwealth's motion to prohibit reference to any pending internal affairs investigations or unfounded allegations. And I did just, I don't know why, I know you filed it previously, Ms. Little, but I just today had the opportunity to read your supplemental memo in opposition. Okay, so, all right, so this is twofold. So I'll hear the Commonwealth regarding Trooper Proctor and also regarding Sergeant Lank.
Sure. Your Honor, with regard to, I think the recent sort of progeny of cases between McFarland and Graham are sort of entirely instructive, I would submit, as far as this particular area is concerned. So when it comes to Sergeant Lank, you're talking about a civil case with no judgment. There was no finding. There was no trial. So I think Graham and McFarland are pretty clear that that is not conduct that can be used in a criminal case to impeach a witness.
Why can't it be used regarding, I think what separates this in some respects from those cases, even though there's no finding, is just like the pure bias part of it, right? If there's bias in favor of the Alberts, which is what the defendants say their defense is among the possible third-party culprits, why can't they cross-examine on that?
Well, the information that I've seen, I don't think specifically lends to a defense of the Alberts. I think if it lends to anything, it lends to Sergeant Lank being involved in some sort of altercation himself, and whatever extent there's any veracity to whatever is alleged by the other parties to have occurred. Firstly, secondly, I don't even believe, again, I think we're going to, you know, one Albert equals the entire Albert family kind of thing. And I don't think that any of the Alberts that they point to, or at least that Mr. Unetti got up and spoke about being potential third-party culprit targets, were even present, involved, or had anything to do with this prior incident. So whether or not Sergeant Lake knows or was 20-some-odd years ago friendly with one member of the Albert family or even two, if they're not any people that were at the residents on Fairview Road that night that were present there in the morning when he arrived pursuant to a call from a sergeant on scene to investigate or anything of that like, I don't see how it's relevant to that form of questioning or impeachment, particularly where it's an unsustained finding and there's nothing concrete as to what transpired.
Okay, I guess my question was simply because something might not fit squarely in McFarland and Graham, if it's admissible for other purposes, then it can come in.
Right.
Who's arguing this part? We'll take these in two parts. So we'll do the Trooper Proctor part afterwards. But Ms. Little, I did say I'd give you the opportunity to argue those two cases. But
Thank you,
want to, you can. But I'm more focused on the bias or
sure.
motive.
Sure. I'll just briefly address Graham and McFarland because
sure.
I do think it's very important that we make clear that both of those cases are completely an opposite to the issue that's before this court, which is admissibility at trial. McFarland and Graham both deal with whether the Commonwealth has an obligation to turn over certain discovery. That's not where we are right now, right? We filed the appropriate motion to receive discovery. We obtained information about an IA investigation. We obviously...
Let's focus on Lank first.
Sure.
Okay. So, I agree with you. They're discovery cases. They're not admissibility cases.
Okay. So that issue aside, Lank has... He's one of the first responders, obviously, who went to 34 Fairview on the morning of January 29th. He's the first person to enter the Albert residence that morning. And he has a long-standing relationship with the Albert family, which is brought in by this sort of prior lawsuit that we brought to the court.
The Albert family appears to be huge, right?
Well,
or very extended family.
Well, I'm getting there. So
okay.
The altercation that Lank was involved in was after he deputized himself to involve himself in a fight that Chris Albert had been in. Chris Albert is one of the Commonwealth's witnesses in this case. He is Brian Albert's brother. He was with them all that night on the 28th. His son, Colin Albert, as you know, is a third-party culprit. So this is not some tangential family member. This is
who would you intend to get, if I allow this, and we really need to...
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Extra value meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.